money, the love of it, according to the Bible, is the source of all kinds of evil. But does that apply to politics? If campaign money is more than just a scorecard for popularity, we're awash in evil. Fundraising has become the lifeblood of politics, and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker is no exception. Far from it. Governor Walker was in New York City on January 17th for a fundraiser hosted by troubled financial giant AIG, the very day major news broke about his political future.
Democrats deliver what they call democracy in a U-Haul with recall supporters.
1 million signatures!
The mood was electric this evening as thousands of recall supporters gathered to celebrate the 1 million signatures delivered.
Now the names need to be validated. The organizers turned in the petitions today to the Government Accountability Board. Hundreds of volunteers were in downtown Madison.
The official push to recall Governor Scott Walker began 60 days ago, and today organizers say it was a big...
Last year, protesters seized the Wisconsin Capitol in Madison, rallying for weeks on end over the governor's decision to dismantle union rights. In the middle of this unprecedented state crisis that triggered the recall effort, Governor Walker took a call from a presumed big league donor, while tens of thousands marched outside of his East Wing office.
Hi, it's Scott Walker.
Scott, David Koch, how are you?
Hey, David, I'm good. And yourself?
I'm very well. A little disheartened by the situation there, but what's the latest?
We're actually hanging pretty tough. Amazingly, there's a much smaller group of protesters, almost all of whom are in from other states today. The state assembly is taking the bill up, getting it all the way to the
governor chatted at length with a person whom he thought was New York oil billionaire David Koch. Koch Industries, long hostile toward unions, is Governor Walker's second largest contributor, according to Common Cause Wisconsin. Walker was really talking to a prankster named Ian Murphy. Walker, the son of a Baptist minister, is fighting for his political life as recall signers threaten to make him the first Wisconsin governor removed from office. To either wage or defend a recall election, it takes financial support. Apparently, lots of it. One of Governor Walker's generous contributors cut a check for $250,000. His name is Bob J. Perry, according to the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. And guess what? Homebuilder Bob can't even vote for Governor Walker. Why? Because Bob lives 1,200 miles away, in Houston, Texas. Three other Walker contributors also gave him $250,000. Those three are from Missouri. In fact, out-of-state contributors account for nearly half of Walker's campaign war chest. Less information about these generous donors would result in the future under a bill pending in the state Senate. It would eliminate the current requirement that donors who give $100 or more reveal their principal place of employment. So less transparency is the answer to more money in politics? To be fair, the governor's opponents are raising big money too, but much less of it so far. Still, about half of the Democratic Party's recall funds also come from outside of Wisconsin. Call it a quirk in the recall law or just plain lunacy, but there are no limits on contributions for recall campaigns in Wisconsin. Is there a better way to support candidates we believe in? Welcome to the Clean Politics Wisconsin podcast, where you will hear directly from those who are intimately familiar with money in politics and have enacted a system that does limit its effects. I'm Steve Buzalaki, a former Wisconsin Public Radio political and health reporter who now writes independently, produces podcasts professionally, and is involved in a good variety of communications projects.
We knew it was going to cost us about $2 each per person to have put this into place, but to us, you know, $2 a person was worth it if we could make a big dent in getting the big money out of politics.
That's Allison Smith, who directs a group called Maine Voters for Clean Elections. Maine, as in the state of Maine. She refers to the cost of an innovative law in her home state that established a voluntary system of public financing for statewide elections. 15 years ago, the voters of Maine initiated and approved the idea through a binding referendum. Although it remains in effect today, the Clean Election Law has changed to comply with a court decision forbidding additional matching funds to publicly financed candidates when their opponents keep taking big money. If somebody wants to run for the legislature in Maine, all he or she needs to do is get a bunch of individual $5 checks made out to the Maine Clean Election Fund to show broad public support. You heard it right. $5 contributions. Then public financing kicks in to cover the campaign costs. 8 of 10 candidates in Maine accept public financing and agree not to accept any private contributions during the campaign or after, should they get elected. Ed Youngblood is one of those candidates who's running clean for one of Maine's state Senate seats.
All you got to do is go out, if you're running for the Senate, and find 175 people to give you $5, and that qualifies you.
What could Wisconsin possibly learn from a tiny state like Maine? It reminded me of northern Wisconsin as I drove a 113-mile stretch of the state from Bangor in the north to the ocean city of Portland in the south. I was on a fact-finding mission to interview key players in this campaign financing drama. Maine is very wooded, but with an ocean attached and a population one-fifth of Wisconsin's. It was a satisfying and inspiring project because the people there initiated a solution that both political parties have embraced. My visit to Maine in mid-December was at the request of a Wisconsin resident who sponsored the trip. Instead of contributing to the political money machine, the sponsor chose to invest in an exploration of a better way to fund campaigns in hopes of igniting a conversation in the Badger State. This retiree, who prefers to remain anonymous, has voluntarily served his small southern Wisconsin community on the city council, on the board of health, as well as in other public capacities over many years. But he is not famous, he's not a billionaire, and he's not connected to any particular partisan advocacy group that I'm aware of. What he is concerned about the growing influence of money in politics, especially following the 2010 U.S. Supreme Court ruling establishing corporations as persons with unlimited free speech rights. That means they can contribute as much money as they want to federal candidates. Maine's election law only covers statewide campaigns, not congressional elections, although there are advocates in Maine who believe the federal system is ripe for reform too. So to give you a feel for how Maine's system works, consider Republican Ed Youngblood's experience. When he was first approached to run for office in the late 1990s, he had no interest in running for the legislature, especially for a race against a well-entrenched incumbent who served multiple terms as the mayor of his community. Youngblood and his wife live in a modest home in Brewer, across the street from the Penobscot River, where bald eagles regularly fish. It's just a few minutes away from the home of science fiction writer Stephen King. What's scary for most potential political candidates is the prospect of dialing for dollars and possibly depleting one's own personal savings to support a campaign. Ed Youngblood had the same fears.
I was at Bangor Savings Bank, a senior vice president, active in the community, did a lot of things in Brewer. The people at where I worked came to me and said, we're looking for someone to run for the Senate. And I said, you got to be crazy. I'm not ready to retire. The sales pitch was, you don't have to go out and raise money. I'd raised a lot of money over the years for all kinds of fundraising efforts as a member of the bank. Everything from the United Way to new building efforts to swimming pool efforts to, you know, lots of community things. So I didn't have a real problem with going out and raising money for those. But I didn't want to spend days on the telephone calling my friends and saying, can I have $100? Can I have $1,000?
But as one of the first clean candidates in the 2000 election, Ed Youngblood didn't need to beg for big money. All he had to do was get 175 people to give him $5 each. He wasn't intimidated at all by that prospect, so he began the process of knocking on doors in his district and asking people for $5.
I visited a little lady well up in her 70s. She came to the door and I said, hi, I'm Ed Youngblood and I'm running for the Maine Senate. And she said, I don't care who you are. She said, come in and sit down here. She said, I said, well, you know, I'm this and I'm that. I'm a conservative. And she said, And she said, I just want to look you in the eye and see if you're somebody I can rely on to make good decisions for me. And I said, I'm not very smart, but I learn fast. I said, this is what people are really interested in. They want you to come. They want to look you in the eye. And the clean election law forces you to do that.
Republican Youngblood did convince enough people to contribute a fin, and that earned him $18,000 in public financing from the taxpayers of Maine. Under the law, he could not solicit or accept any more money from anybody. His opponent, the incumbent, ran in the traditional manner and amassed a war chest twice that of Youngblood's. To help even the playing field, the public financing system did provide more matching funds to Youngblood, but that part of the law has been ruled illegal because the court said it infringes on the free speech rights of the traditional candidates who raise more money. The matching money, according to the ruling, chills speech because it creates a disincentive for traditional candidates to raise money. Nevertheless, when all of the votes were cast, Ed Youngblood was the victor, having won every ward in his hometown of Brewer.
I would not have run for public office without the Clean Elections program. I just wouldn't have done it.
2 years later, Ed Youngblood ran for re-election, and again as a clean candidate. This time, his opponent also voluntarily decided to accept public financing, but Youngblood prevailed. An attorney who lives near Portland, Maine, tells a similar story, though he's a Democrat. Like Youngblood, John Brautigam believes strongly in public financing and limiting the influence of money in politics. In 2004, Brautigam ran for the state legislature as a clean candidate against an opponent, he says, who spent more than any other candidate in the state. For an assembly seat, Brautigam only needed to get 50 people to make a $5 contribution on his behalf. Once he achieved that, Brautigam focused on talking to people about what was important to the district. That was no longer a luxury because he didn't have to waste any time fundraising. When the dust finally settled, Brautigam won the election by just 55 votes following a recount. Had there not been the public financing option?
I did not think I would have run. I would have been very sensitive to the need to raise money, the sort of fundraising imperative that is there in every legislative race. I mean, I just would not have wanted to serve having to go and raise money from the kinds of usual suspects, the lobbyists, the lawyers, the executives, and so on. I just would not have wanted to do that. It would not have been as much of an enjoyable experience for me as well, because I really like going door to door in my district and talking to people and really making that the focus of my campaign. That was really what it was all about for me.
Brautigam believes he actually benefited from the fact that he didn't take the big money. Health insurance was a key issue in the race, and his opponent had accepted hefty contributions from health insurance companies. Perhaps Maine voters noticed that. Brautigam believes they did. Once in office, Brautigam felt liberated to represent his constituents in the best way he knew how, without worrying about upsetting a big donor with a vote.
I had absolutely no implicit or explicit or any kind of obligation to anybody other than my constituents. It was very liberating. Frankly, that's the only way I could do it. I don't see how somebody else can try to sort out their various commitments and their various supporters, people who they rely on for funds for the campaign. I don't see how people can serve that way. It just wouldn't have worked for me.
It wouldn't have worked for Republican Youngblood either. Once in office, Youngblood also felt free to represent his district.
It made it very easy for me because the lobbyists are in the hallways every day, and the beer people are pushing to get this done. The small woodlot owners are getting to push this done. The developers are getting to push this done. And they've all got a pitch that they want you to vote for. I found it very easy because I had accepted no money from any of them. More importantly, if I'm looking to run again in 2 years, I'm not going to be looking for them. So if they don't like me, that's too bad. They could do some advertising campaigns and get my constituents to turn against me if they wished, but I could say, I never accepted a penny from the people that wanted this or this or this. If you don't do that, then the minute you get there, you're thinking, subconsciously maybe, but you're thinking about, now, I got to get some money out of the Maine Bankers Association. I got to get some money out of the Maine Beer Distributors Group. I got to get some money out of the waste disposal people, whoever it might be. So I've got to listen to this person because I'd like his $2,000 down the road somewhere.
If the traditional fundraising system doesn't work for Republican Youngblood or Democrat Brautigam, who does it work for? Does a system awash in campaign cash work for the citizenry? Allison Smith from Maine Clean Elections sure doesn't think so. I found Smith on the internet and soon learned she was one of the original organizers who helped push Maine's clean elections referendum through. After visiting the state and talking to people, it became obvious that she's widely credited with being the respected advocate who helped convince the voters to try this innovative program. I arranged to meet Smith at her home near Portland, Maine, to discuss her passion for getting money out of politics. Not only does Maine's clean election system attract a greater array of citizens willing to serve, such as Democrat Brautigam and Republican Youngblood, but Allison Smith says it also keeps the legislature honest and independent.
When it comes to clean elections, you know, when I have the Speaker of the Maine House tell me that they never, ever, ever could have passed a ban on DECA, which is a cancer-causing fire retardant chemical that's ubiquitous, they never would have been able to pass a ban on DECA in Maine without clean elections. That tells me something. Now, here's a, you know, very disruptive chemical, and the chemical industry fought this tooth and nail. They gave it everything they had. They ran full-page newspaper ads. They ran ads on TV that Maine was just an inferno. You know, we were going up in flames because we were going to ban DECA. But, you know, really, there are safer alternatives to DECA, and everybody knows it. And so, you know, people came to testify with their concerns about their children and the flame retardant chemicals in their pajamas and in building materials and so forth. And, you know, the fact is people don't want to be subject to exposure to toxic chemicals without choosing to do so. So these things that just become the background, that what we breathe and, you know, what we ingest without even planning to, it's just people don't like that. There's a lot of concern around it. So the lobbyists did what they did, the people did what they did, and in the end, the legislature voted on the side of, you know, people's concern about their kids and their future. And in Maine, these lobbyists had one less tool in their toolkits than lobbyists in other states. At no point in that whole public debate could these lobbyists from the chemical industry offer a campaign contribution to legislators or threaten to withhold a campaign contribution to 80% of the legislators. It's a voluntary system, not everybody uses it, but 80% of the legislature used clean elections and therefore didn't need them to win the last time, wouldn't need them to win the next time. So that's a powerful force.
Smith says there was a time when lobbyists would go on the floor of the Maine House and hand out checks before important votes. Now there are legislators who run and serve in Maine without ever taking a contribution from a lobbyist. What Maine has achieved seems to attack the very issue that Common Cause is concerned about. The nonprofit and nonpartisan advocacy organization worries about who pays for campaigns, what they get in return, and how that affects public policy. Former legislator Beth Edmonds of Freeport, Maine, has identical concerns. Now a full-time library director, Edmonds knows what it's like to run as both a traditional legislative candidate and as a clean candidate. As a Democrat, she accepted substantial union contributions in her first run for the Maine Senate, which she won. But when the clean election option came along in 2000, she jumped at the chance to forsake fundraising and won that election anyway. Edmonds says no matter how pure your heart, money affects how legislators act toward constituents, herself included. I spoke with her at her office in the newly renovated Freeport Library.
I bet a lot of legislators, regardless of where the money came from, do their best to make a decision. But I will challenge any legislator to tell me that if someone hasn't handed you $100, that when you see them in the hall, you don't, just as a politeness, just out of your human connection to the person, you don't say, "Hi, Joe, how are you? What are you up here for today? where you might not say that to the guy who didn't give you any money, but has a legitimate concern, wants your attention, you're terribly busy, you blow him off.
Human nature.
Human nature. Just human nature. Not evil intent. But, you know, somebody calls you on the phone, maybe giving you $100 or $1,000, you're taking the call. But the little old lady down the street who really can't pay her fuel bill and needs LIHEAP help, you're likely to say to your aide, see what you can do for her. But it's not the same.
What Beth Edmonds is talking about is access to legislators. Money may not buy love, but it does buy access. Take away the big checks, says Maine's Beth Edmonds, and politicians have a different mindset.
The good thing for me was, once you're done, now you can talk to people. Now you can talk to everybody you meet who has any opinion, axe to grind, whatever, and you're having a real conversation with them. You agree or you don't agree, doesn't matter. What it means to me is that when you're in the legislature and a lobbyist approaches you, and lobbyists are not bad people, they often have good information. You just need to know that it's one side of a conversation. But when a lobbyist approaches you, you can listen to them like you listen to Joe Zilch, the guy down the street. And you have their set of information, and you can say, and who doesn't agree with you about this? And if they're a good lobbyist, they tell you. So all of a sudden, you're making decisions based on your best judgment.
But is money really out of Maine politics? Far from it, says Republican State Representative Andre Cushing, Maine's House Majority Leader, who wants to phase out his state's clean elections law. He's won both of his elections with what he calls a broad base of local supporters and without any taxpayer money.
I have always believed that traditionally funded candidates are better positioned to pay attention to the voters simply because you have to earn the trust of people who are willing to contribute money to your campaign as well as earning their vote.
Cushing was the successful plaintiff in a lawsuit that outlawed a matching funds provision of the Maine law intended to level the playing field when traditional candidates keep raising cash. It provided extra funds from taxpayers to candidates like Ed Youngblood when their traditionally funded opponents racked up bigger campaign war chests. Representative Cushing, whom I met at a restaurant near the state capitol in Augusta, told me that if getting money out of politics was the goal of the clean election law, it's been a dismal failure.
If you look at the facts, there is more money expended in the political system today than there was prior to the clean election system. And that is because First Amendment right does not allow you to limit what outside individuals or organizations can do on behalf of a candidate or in opposition to the candidate. That is probably, to me, the seedier side of what clean elections has brought to Maine.
Representative Cushing says the clean election law, the title of which he finds irritating as a traditionally funded candidate, actually has increased the flow of political money because taxpayer dollars are now added to the pile. Besides that, he says the bar is way too low for candidates to get access to that public funding.
In a House race, you go out and collect $65 checks, $300, that then qualifies you for $4,100. I mean, it's even better than buying lottery tickets. I mean, it's a sure thing. You get the 60 checks, you got $4,100.
What's more, Cushing says Maine already has limits to control direct contributions to candidates, so no one person can give a politician enough money to really influence his or her vote. For his part, Representative Cushing says he'll refuse donations from anybody who appears to want to unduly influence him. For now, Maine's public financing system remains solidly in place, but Cushing wants to start an honest discussion about, in his words, how Maine extricates itself from the clean election process.
The opponents of clean elections, and there are opponents, there always have been, but they are a minority of Maine people. They have always blamed whatever ills exist in politics on clean elections.
Allison Smith from Maine Clean Elections concedes that Cushing is correct that there is more money in Maine politics today than there was before the law started. However, she says there's more money in every state now.
We have an explosion of money in politics, and that has less to do with Maine's public funding system than it has to do with other forces. Look at the United States Supreme Court. And look at the, you know, ability of these very, you know, well-funded special interests to get around existing mostly federal campaign finance laws. I mean, it's a huge problem. And people around the country get it. They totally understand that the deck is stacked, the game is rigged, and they're getting the short end of the stick every time. If you're not a big money special interest and you don't get to have your way most of the time in your state capital or in Washington, D.C. So what do we need to fix that? One thing we need to fix it is we need a robust public funding system.
Smith says public funding is more important now than ever because of the vast amounts of independent spending that is going on now. This is, of course, what Representative Andre Cushing also complained about. Smith says in the past state election in Maine, a Republican group poured almost $100,000 into one Senate race. That might not seem like so much by Wisconsin standards, but it's five times what might normally be spent in a Maine Senate district, which is relatively small. Both Smith and Cushing agree that the candidates may not want independent money spent on their behalf because the candidates can't control the message or may get blamed for false or misleading accusations made against their opponent. But free speech means free spending, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's the root of the independent spending problem, says former Maine legislator Beth Edmonds.
I wish we didn't have to deal with independent expenditures, and if Congress and the Supreme Court had not called corporations people, which they aren't, this would make it a lot simpler. Part of the problem you're trying to figure out is, since you can't forbid people to be regularly funded candidates, in other words, gather as much money as you want, you have to figure out some way to have a fair playing field.
Edmonds admits that there are some drawbacks to public financing, Maine's program included, but she and other supporters of the clean election system maintain it's still much preferable to rich individuals and special interest groups fueling campaign advertising, as is the case in most states, including Wisconsin. In fact, that's the way Wisconsin campaigns are funded now. That's because on June 26, 2011, Wisconsin's public financing program, the Wisconsin Election Campaign Fund, officially died when Governor Walker signed his first state budget. The governor proposed funding changes that would have crippled the public financing program, so the Republican-controlled Joint Finance Committee took Walker's idea to the next logical step and put the program out of its misery altogether. In doing so, the Government Accountability Board estimated that about $1 million from the languishing fund would be transferred to the state's general fund, thereby officially mothballing a program that was considered among the best in the country when it first was established 33 years ago. The money was used to finance the new and expensive voter ID law, which critics charge addresses a voter fraud problem that doesn't exist. There's scant evidence of illegal voter activity in Wisconsin. Nevertheless, if Wisconsin were to embark on a citizen-based attempt to reestablish a public financing system that actually works, where would we start? Unlike Maine, the citizens of Wisconsin cannot just pass a binding referendum and change our campaign finance laws. We could initiate and pass an advisory referendum, but it would still be up to Wisconsin's state legislature to enact a law. Ed Youngblood says the biggest hurdle to creating an effective public financing system is not resistance from either major political party, per se, so much as it is incumbents, generally. Sitting lawmakers don't tend to like a system like Maine's because it becomes much easier for a potential opponent to mount a campaign, and that's not in an incumbent's best interest. The other big hurdle is the financing. Taxpayers need to cough up the change to pay for these clean candidates, and politicians today are loath to raise taxes for anything, especially when the economy is in the tank. Nationally, conservatives even sign pledges never to raise taxes under any circumstances. Maine is a geographically small state, and elections do not hinge on TV advertising to get a candidate's message out. In fact, there are only two TV stations in the whole state. This means elections there do not require huge budgets. In Maine, taxpayers have spent only $16 million funding clean elections since the law took effect in 1996. But for bigger states like Wisconsin, more public financing money would have to become available for those clean candidates to compete against traditionally financed opponents. But Maine's Representative Andre Cushing contends spending taxpayer money on elections is an inappropriate use of scarce funds. As he sees it, the law has taken the Maine taxpayer on a scary, expensive ride.
And they're sort of the helpless victims in the back of the roller coaster. The taxpayer is forced to put $2 million into the system every year through budgeting. And that money is expended through a system or a mechanism that they have no control over. They can't say, this person who got on the ballot by getting 50 people to sign their nomination paper can then go out and access $4,000 or $5,000 of my tax money and spend it any way they want. They can pay themselves mileage, they can buy a laptop computer, they can take their colleagues and supporters out to dinner, all on the taxpayer's dime.
Of course, others feel that the tax money spent on clean elections is a wise investment. And in Maine's case, it amounts to just $2 per person. Democrat Beth Edmonds.
You're saving money hand over fist, because I like to look down the road. I like to say, you help this person now, you don't have to help them here, here, and here. Same thing with paying for clean elections. You're not going to run into the same troubles that you would have run into. I think it's a penny saved.
Edmonds says there remains widespread public support in Maine, but she says even voters there still need to be constantly reminded about why the clean election system is valuable. Perhaps that is one reason Wisconsin's public financing law languished. When was the last time you heard any prominent effort to educate voters about its worth? We all saw the checkoff on the state income tax form, but how many of us really understood the program? A recent report from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau states that in 2009, 96% of Wisconsin voters chose not to voluntarily donate $3 to the public financing system via that checkoff. Consequently, hardly any Wisconsin candidates agreed to take public financing and its spending limits because there wasn't enough cash in the kitty to make it practical for them to go that route. What's happening in Wisconsin instead? And here's the report's kicker, and I quote, contribution data shows that a relatively small number of individuals, committees, and businesses are providing the funding for these races. That is exactly what Maine has worked so hard to avoid. Again, Allison Smith from Maine Clean Elections.
These investments are business decisions. They are not, you know, electoral decisions. They're business decisions for these companies. For us, it's entirely different. We have different motivation. There's no question that having a full public funding system that allows people who might otherwise not run to run is just a powerful way to get people involved in politics. And, you know, I hope that more states will experiment with this, because what could be healthier for American democracy than having more people off the couch paying attention, having a stake in the people who represent them? Would much rather it was regular folks who felt they had a stake in their elected official than, you know, Monsanto or Big Pharma or any other big lobby. They do have a stake because they invest in these elections.
A prophetic 2008 report from the California-based Center for Government Studies, an organization that promotes fairness in government policymaking, looks specifically at Wisconsin's public financing law, and it concluded that it is failing. The report said public funding has been frozen, candidates do not accept the dwindling monies that remain, and the candidates' spending limits are unrealistic. Without major changes, the 45-page report accurately predicted that Wisconsin's public financing system was doomed. And so it was. The program and all of the statutory language creating it disappeared last spring with the new budget. A Republican senator, Glenn Grothman, who supported the action to kill public financing, was asked for comment. He told a reporter, "I don't know anyone who wants to spend money on such a silly thing." Is it silly to endeavor to lessen the influence of money in politics? That's for the citizens of Wisconsin to decide. It's our state, and we're the ones who decide who will represent us at the Capitol and how candidates run for office. Advocates of clean elections in Maine say there is no reason why a similar public financing program wouldn't work for Wisconsin and other states. Arizona, Vermont, and Connecticut already have comparable public financing efforts in place. But the Midwest should be especially well-suited for a viable public financing program, given Wisconsin's reputation for relatively clean politics. Plus, the Badger State traditionally has had a lot of ticket-splitting voters, meaning party affiliation isn't everything to us. Jonathan Wayne, who directs the Maine Ethics Commission, says the size of the state shouldn't have much to do with whether public financing of elections can be implemented either. Wayne oversees Maine's program and monitors how the taxpayers' money is spent during elections. He grew up in Chicago and has worked political jobs in the Midwest, so he has some understanding of politics in the region.
There are regions where this kind of program can be administered more easily and can work better, and I think northern New England, the northern part of the Midwest, are two regions where I think this kind of program can work well. People in our state who run for the legislature tend to be community leaders. They care a lot about their reputations. They tend to want to do everything the right way.
If the right way is a clean election program, how exactly do we get started? The advice from Maine is to follow the money. Dig up specifics about how much is being spent and on whom. Be very specific and even find the names of spouses, children, because oftentimes checks made out by family members are used to get around contribution limits. Then hold news conferences, write letters to the editor, and inform the local news media. That's exactly what the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign does now. Its website is filled with specifics about what groups and individuals are spending on politicians and political action committees. For example, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign reports that the liquor, beer, and wine industry has contributed more than $2.5 million to legislators over the past 10 years, one of the largest campaign contributors in the state. Although Wisconsin was just named the number one binge drinking state in the nation by the Centers for Disease Control, the Wisconsin legislature refuses to raise the beer tax, even the recently proposed 6.5 cents per gallon. The beer tax has not been increased in the past 43 years. Could campaign contributions to key lawmakers have anything to do with that? More advice from Maine. Use disclosure laws to see who is getting the money and what is being bought. Clean election advocates say the public understands intuitively that contributions are made with an expectation of getting something in return. Ultimately, any change in how Wisconsin elects its leaders will have to come from the same source as Maine, from voters themselves. Allison Smith of Maine Clean Elections says citizens are responsible for their democracy and need to be the ones that take the lead. And even when you're successful, she says Maine advocates constantly have had to defend the state's clean election law.
From the day it passed, it's been challenged, whether it's been in court or whether we've had political challenges, funding challenges. So there's no rest for reformers. I mean, even when a law passes, we've had to spend plenty of time in the legislature convincing them not to dumb down the system, not to defund the system. I mean, one of the challenges of achieving real campaign finance reform is that we have to use the system that exists today in order to create a system that will be better for tomorrow. So the legislative path is fraught. We did it through a citizen initiative, which was a tremendous amount of work. Citizen initiatives are not always great for people, but on this particular issue, practically every paper in the state understood that this issue of campaign finance reform was one of those tiny handful of issues where the people had to lead. The leaders will follow when the people lead.
The $5 bill on which Maine bet the ranch bears the image of Abraham Lincoln, whose famous Gettysburg Address line has been marred by the reality of modern political campaigning. Sadly, we've become a government of the money, by the money, for the money. Lots of Maine citizens were crazy enough to rely on $5 to create a better, more accountable way to elect their leaders. In Wisconsin, maybe the ante would be $10 or $15 each if we developed our own version of a workable public financing system. But the real gamble for regular Wisconsin citizens may well be to keep doing exactly what we're doing now, staying out of the game and watching the high rollers toss loaded dice. There is hope on the horizon, however. Last May, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign announced an innovative public financing plan called Ending Wealthfare for Getting Big Money Out of State Politics. Here are the key parts. Designate $10 per state taxpayer per year from the general fund to the Wisconsin Clean Election Fund. A tax credit for small contributions, sharply lower spending limits, greater disclosure for campaign spending, and the source of the money. Corporations and associations must notify shareholders of campaign donations and get a majority vote to okay them. Such ideas keep with Wisconsin's long history of innovation. Only in Wisconsin was the electric guitar born, life-saving organ preservation fluid invented, and vitamin D-enriched food and milk first developed. And that's not to mention the Badger State's famous son, Fighting Bob La Follette. A Republican most of his life, La Follette became a fiercely independent congressman and governor who railed against corruption and the power of political parties and corporations. With a record like that, can Wisconsin move anywhere other than forward? Voters have the power to change the political culture to the degree that it would be considered utterly obscene to accept a $250,000 check from a contributor. Who knows, maybe we could even teach those lobster lovers a thing or two about how to further improve their campaign finance law. But not just yet. Not while the recall millions continue to flow in from all over America.
Freeze, Foster, Jackson, Wyoming, Freeze Associates Incorporated, $100,000. Hanley, William L., Palm Beach, Florida, Lexington Management Group, $40,000. Hertog, Roger.
Could this really be what democracy looks like? For more information about my mission to Maine, including videos, links, and more, visit cleanwisconsinpolitics.com. That's cleanwisconsinpolitics.com. That's our program. I'm Steve Buzalaki.
Ruth J., Wausau, Wisconsin. Wausau Homes, Incorporated, $50,000. Uline, Richard E., Lake Forest, Illinois. Uline, Incorporated, $100,000. Cloister, Dennis J., Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Marshall & Mosley Corporation, $50,000. Johnson, Willis, Franklin, Tennessee. Copart Incorporated.